Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Boss Blues podcast. This is Raynard Frost, and I am joined with Despain and our new guest hosts, New Seveth. Say hello, guys.
Yo.
Yo. Friends call me Seveth.
Fantastic. Today, we're going to talk about something that I feel is very integral to developing your game. But then again, everything we talk about is usually integral to developing a game. But today, we're going to talk about battle systems. But before we get into that...
What time is it?
What? There's a time and a place
it's
for things?
Player flay time.
A player flay?
Let's do a player flay.
I think that's a good idea.
Woo! My first player flay.
Yay! You're going to enjoy it.
All right, so today we're going to be talking about Tina of the Stars by Ratty524. You can, as always, you can find it in the project development section on RPG Maker web forums. And this game looks kind of adorable. It's a little different than most of the player flays that we've been looking at because it's not your traditional RPG game. It's made with RPG Maker, but it looks a lot more like a Pac-Man type game. It's an arcade game with really adorable art. So, there's really not much of a story here. I mean, it has a story. It has some really adorable, like, graphics. I would suggest you check it out because a lot of this game is in the visual. I mean, like, you're a star and you crash on a planet and or something like that. But the story is really not important here. This game is all about the visuals and the gameplay, and it looks like it's really more about just the whole atmosphere, and it seems to be really unique. So,
the story may not be important, but tradition demands.
Are you going to read it anyway?
I'm going to read it anyway.
All right, go for it.
It should also be noted that, along with the story, a lot of really great custom art for the intro scene.
Yes. Like, I can imagine this having text on the bottom and having these images shown, like, in an arcade case. Like, those old, old arcade games where they'd show your kind of story. Where just be still and have thing in the bottom, and you just hear tense music in the background.
Yeah, I can see that.
Except in this case, it might be cutesy, but I don't know.
All right, Captain, go ahead and read.
Captain... Alright. Amongst the farthest reaches of the universe, there is a starry galaxy known as the Feifei Galaxy. Amongst this galaxy is a lush, beautiful little planet called Pix. This planet is inhabited by the galaxy's most respected magical beings, the fairies, and on their home planet they flutter about with their wings and enjoy peace and tranquility. Until now. One day, everything on planet Pix seemed to be like any other day, blissful and quiet. Suddenly, a dark haze envelops the entire planet, blocking out the sun and covering the land with darkness. Several comets suddenly drop from this haze, and what comes out when they crash onto the ground? Beasts and other bizarre creatures that one can only imagine existing. They attack the citizens and wreak havoc wherever they go, sending this once peaceful world into a panic. Up in the dark sky, a cloaked figure gazes upon the mayhem and laughs. The space demon, Lord Grimm of Darkness, has arrived to conquer planet Pix. Among the violence caused by the monsters, a small green-haired fairy rushes to a shrine. She bows down and makes a wish to the stars. Her message became a star and flew off into space. Somewhere among the fairy galaxy, a spaceship hovers slowly, carrying a sleeping, white-haired fairy wearing pink boxing gloves and a star-stubbed sports top. Suddenly, the ship sounds an alarm, awakening the fairy abruptly. The alarm has detected a wish to a galaxy warrior, and a planet is in deep trouble. This young warrior's name is Tina, and she sets her ship to warp speed to travel to the planet Pix. While this little fairy doesn't really know what she has to do yet, she has a feeling that she is about to embark on a quest that is larger than her small size.
I just want to go back to Lord of Grimm. Wait, Lord Grimm of Darkness is a fantastic name. It's
the space demon, Lord Grimm of Darkness.
It works
because
for
of
a
Grimm
game like
Shadow.
This. It totally works for a game like this because it's so cutesy and like. It doesn't need, you know, amazing names. I mean, the style of it seems to totally work.
Yeah. It does.
All right, so let's look at the characters and the cast, actually, which I kind of like better. And it's more about the art than anything else, it seems. Like, I doubt the characters are going to be that important in an arcade game like this.
Yeah, you just got the main character who's a fairy, who's 130, except she's about 13 or 12 in human years, because fairies have a long lifespan. You know that usual, well, my elf is 1,000 years old, but physically they look to be 17 because anime. And then we got Dory O'Ryan, and it's a girl.
Yeah, that's a girl. She has little boobs.
Oh, look like a dude from the neck up.
His long hair.
I don't know how you see that.
Well, because yeah, I'm see used that. To guys having long hair. Because anime.
Good reason.
But yeah, it wasn't until I saw the dress that I was like, wait a second. And plus, you're wearing a dress and you got those big-ass gloves. I'm just kind of like, wait a second.
And dude, fairies are girls.
No, there could be guy fairies. Haven't you seen the Tinkerbell movies?
No.
Have you?
In my line of work, sometimes you have to watch movies you really don't want to watch.
And all right, and then we got Lord Grimm, who kind of looks like a typical Grim Reaper guy. And yep. The characters after that I actually like a lot more than the main characters, because they're like, they're just little monsters, right? They're the kind of beasts that you fight, I guess. And they're adorable. They look like, you know, there's some really cool designs in here. Like, I like the Wheelin guy. It's like, they're all little dudes with faces, and Bond's a little fire thing. And I think they look pretty cool.
I like Fugul because Fugul has this expression on its face where you're in a cafeteria in elementary school and somebody said a bad word. The ghost is just like, ooh. And then Bonehead. Bonehead looks like a bonehead.
We need to get back to the trend of naming the random mooks. Like Marty, the flying Cyclops.
Yes.
Remember, it's just like the random enemy.
Yes. Just Marty. Whelan, Bon. Like bonfire. I get it, because it's a flaming Bond.
I like the expression on his face.
Yeah, just like... and then there's Target, which has the lol face. It just kind of rolls around. Targets are dummy monsters created only for Grimm to hone his battling skills. Somehow, they escaped his domain and found their way into Planet Pix. They do nothing in particular and are only available to fight in bonus games.
All right, I like it.
There you go.
I like that rationalization within game logic. It's well done. Perforato, which looks like a Ghastly with a spike fetish.
It looks cool. I like the monster design. They're simple, but they're unique.
Yes, I agree.
And they totally fit in the tone of the game.
And this, oh my god, this is something every topic needs from now on. There's a section called How to Play.
Well,
finally.
It makes sense here because it's like it's not your typical RPG game. Like the controls
even in the
are
RPG
a little different.
Games, they should have like a how to play or something where they go in depth about the features besides just you can do alchemy. It's like, but how?
Yeah, I guess so.
Alright.
I mean, so, he could have easily just said it plays basically like Pac-Man with a couple differences. But
yeah,
and fleshed out.
And that would have been terrible. But no, it goes in depth. Tina of the Stars is an action game. Focus on clearing the level within a given time. The objective of the game is to clear out all monsters on the screen. Unfortunately, Tina's very weak early on, and a single touch from an enemy can kill her. However, every level is filled with stars for you to collect. Once you get all the stars in a stage, you can achieve your powered form and go on a rampage.
I like it. It sounds like it's actually fun to play.
Yeah, it sounds simple. It's very arcadey.
All right, so do you want to jump to the screenshots so we can talk about the graphics a little bit?
Because
the graphics seem like the clear highlight of this game.
Yes, they do.
They do. I mean, there's some weird inconsistencies. Like, some things definitely seem better than others.
Yeah, like, a lot of it looks just like redrawn RTP.
No, a lot of these graphics I recognize, they were from the old RMXP era, and they're made by a dude named Green Raven. And it looks like the sprites were made by Ratty himself, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like the spaceship. The spaceship she lands in looks pretty badass.
It's adorable. It's pink.
But I just like the red gem on the front, which I presume to also be on all four sides. But it's just that red gem. I'm just like, ah, yes, Mega Man. That's great.
Yeah, you would think that.
I would.
I love the bright colors.
The
whole style of the game. It's
good.
Bright, and it's happy, and it's cutesy. And not enough games are like that. Too many games take themselves so seriously, and they're all gritty and dark. And this just looks like it's actually just fun.
Yeah, these tile sets, though, they are redrawn XP tiles, just with a more simplistic art style.
And the HUD doesn't really mix with the art style, I think.
The HUD's ugly. Yeah, like all the hearts are all big and smooth and there's all sort of flash
effects.
Weird
colors.
Yeah, and there's like three different fonts. Like there's the lives and time font, then there's the numbers, which is weird for time, then there's the score at the bottom.
Yeah. The HUD could use some work to be more cohesive.
Yeah, there's not a lot of consistency.
Yeah. And that's just needed a UI update. But the game itself looks interesting. I don't see any shots with the stars, though. That's where you have to pick up stars. Every screenshot...
They're very subtle.
Yeah,
they're
the little blue things.
Oh, okay, I see them. Yeah, three screenshots weren't showing. There we go. All right, I see him. Yeah, the little blue sparkle thingies. All right, that makes sense.
Probably be a bit more vibrant.
They should be. They should be a little easier to see, but maybe they're animated in-game or something.
Yeah. So you pick them up, and then...
You get all of them, and then you take out the monsters.
Yeah,
sounds good.
Then I guess you flash or something. Like if you look at the boss battle screenshot where she's fighting the hooded guy, she's, like, sparkling. So I assume that means she's in power-up mode. She can just run into the bad guy and do damage.
Yeah. Although, for a boss, I would think that you'd need a bit more than just, I'm going to run into him multiple times.
Yeah, so. Maybe there is more, and we just can't see it in the screenshot. The boss definitely has, like, a life meter something on the side, so.
Yeah.
I mean, the Pac-Man pick up everything and get powered mode is clearly just a base. It looks like he does some interesting things with it.
Yeah. I mean, each level looks unique. I mean, unlike Pac-Man where it's just one level, you know. Like, each level, they have different settings, and they have different layouts and stuff, so I can dig it.
Sounds good. So, what are your thoughts on this game? Would you give it a play or a flay?
Definitely play.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, there's things about... The thing about this game that makes it super appealing to me is that it's the whole short arcade nature. Like, you can just download this game, play it for a little bit, have fun, and you get the feel for the game, right? It's not like this massive 100-hour RPG epic. It's something that you can download and have some fun with. So because of that, and because of the cute art style, which you don't really see a lot, I definitely say this is a play. Seems like it's worth checking out.
Well, I'm going to say it's a flay because it's not a 100-hour RPG epic, which I've come to expect from every game I play. No, it's a play. It's a play. It's cutesy and it's simple. And it's done, apparently. He says that this game is 100% finished, final iteration. And that in itself makes it worthy of playing because it looks interesting. The communication is well done in the topic. Screenshots show off. You can get a good grasp of the gameplay. The post is well written. It's got an excuse plot. That's all you really need to get started. And it's done. So it pretty much is a step above and beyond most RPG Maker games already.
You know, we talk a lot about giving your game its own unique identity or feel. And this game really seems to have that going for it.
Well, yeah, aside from the fact that you should... Oh, it's Pac-Man.
Yeah, but it looks nothing like Pac-Man.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't look like Pac-Man, but you can identify
like,
the
when you put the whole,
yeah, it's,
you put
it
the whole package
familiar,
together.
It is familiar, but different, which is something you should...
Which is kind of ideal, really, because you know, you want to be able to get into a game and kind of instinctively know how to play it, but you want to still have those unique, interesting things. And this game definitely looks like it has that.
Yeah, so let's say Tina of the Stars... by Ratty524. Check it out in the Project Development Forum. We are giving this game a play, so definitely check that out. Before we move on to the main topic, I do want to mention briefly that Raynard and I have been streaming some RPG Maker games. Some people might have caught that. You can find us on Twitch TV, twitch.tv/thedeskpain, I think. And you can see the archives of the other games we saw, and follow us there so you can check us out. We'll be playing games, you know, live in the future.
We play bad RPG Maker games, so you don't have to.
Yeah, I like that tagline.
I mean, hopefully we'll play some good ones. We did play a good RPG Maker web game. Well, not web game, but it was an old RPG Maker 2003 game that we played. That was actually pretty good. It had bugs.
We still have to finish it.
We still have to finish it.
I watched you guys play some of it. It was fun.
Yeah.
Good
stuff. It wasn't like She Comes, which was...
I don't know. She
terrible.
Comes going for it.
Terrible.
It certainly could use a lot of improvement. But yeah, definitely check that out. We'll be streaming more in the future, so something to keep an eye on. So let's move on to today's main subject. We are going to be talking about battle systems. And I want to thank The Pristine, who left a comment on FinalBossBlues.com, which really inspired us here. In his post, he said, you know, he really wants to give people the idea of, you know, fuck yes, a battle. Like, people can get excited for it. And that idea we like a lot, because there are so many RPG games you play, and it's just like, oh no, another battle, right? Like, I don't want to sit through this. I want to, you know, get back to the game. But, you know, there's that idea that the battles, you know, are holding you back from the game, but really the battle system should be the core of the game. The battle system should be the game itself. You know, most RPGs, there's pretty much, you know, two distinctions. There's the map and then there's the battle. And they both have to come together. So, you know, if you don't like one of them, you're not going to like more than half of the game.
Yes, this is definitely a subject that has been frequently requested by people. I mean, DB, Ace-9, Aura both I believe, commented on Final Boss Blues. And he also came to my blog and was just all, hey, I think you should really cover battle systems. This is just okay. Something that's not covered enough. And I'm like, you know what? There's not a lot of people that discuss battle systems because they kind of take the default battle system or YanFly scripts for granted. And people just look at, I'm just going to slap this battle system or I'm going to copy this game's battle system. And they don't really think of, how can I make my own battle system fun? Or what about these battle systems I like that are fun? So it's more trying to find that uniqueness instead of just trying to copy success that we really need to cover and discuss.
Yeah, so Raynard, what do you want to talk about battle systems? Do you have any good examples that maybe not the people should copy them, but things that design-wise, you know, sparked your interest?
Okay, I got two games, and yes, they're popular games, so I'm not going to apologize for that.
Let me guess. You're going to talk about Persona because you talk about that every podcast.
Oh, yes! For traditional RPG battle systems, Persona 4 Golden had one of the best RPG battle systems I've ever played because it's turn-based, but it does have an elemental metagame. Well, not metagame, but it just has an elemental dynamic where you want to hit certain elements to attribute weaknesses. But unlike Pokemon, where it's super effective, massive amounts of damage, they have this nice, cool added effect that kind of feels like a combo where you hit an enemy with a weakness, they get knocked down. You knock down all enemies, you get a bonus all-out attack that does neutral damage that just annihilates the enemy. And all your party members that aren't otherwise incapacitated join in this attack. So through this, if you play wisely and you hit enemies' weaknesses, you can finish a battle in 1-2 rounds or even a single round and just wipe everything out and you feel really empowered from it. Whereas if you just play blindly or you mash attack and you're not getting really good criticals, then the rounds will take a lot longer. You have a higher chance of dying. I mean, if you play smartly, the battles are super easy in a fun way, not like I'm just bashing stuff. It's just more of like, hey, I'm playing this smartly and I'm being rewarded for it. Whereas if I just ran through like a bull in a china shop, I'd be, you know, get my butt kicked. Another game that I think for a more active battle system, because people who prefer something that's a bit less turn-based, Ni No Kuni was an amazing battle system. Basically, you can have three party members, and each party member gets three monsters, and you can swap the monsters between your party members. So through that, each monster has a pool of skills they can learn, but only a certain amount of move slots, which is kind of Persona-esque.
Sounds like Pokemon.
It does sound like Pokemon. I'm going to get to that. But basically, you can assign these moves to your characters instead of like with Pokemon, where once they learn a move, you can either choose to learn it or not learn it, and then you have to go to some NPC and give them an item and get that move back. You can swap moves whenever you want in between battles. And you can also metamorphize or evolve your enemy, your monsters to become stronger, and you can feed them items to boost their stats and make them like you more and all this stuff. And there's all these extra gameplay aspects that add to it that make the battles more fun as far as making your character stronger. But as far as the core combat itself, you just have your moves, you jump out, and it's turn-based in the sense of, all right, I'm going to pause, pick which enemy I want to fight. But then you basically can on the fly pick which attacks you want. And they also have some good timing where an enemy is broadcasting an attack and you can quickly switch to defend and defend from that attack, and then gets reduced damage and health and mana orbs drop off. And that would be – I would imagine that would be fairly difficult and require a lot of scripting to do an RPG Maker. But it's definitely something that could be done. And I think that adding elements like if you play smart – basically the two thing those battle systems have in common is if you play smartly, you are rewarded. Whereas if you just bash attack, you get your butt kicked. So
– here's a question. Is the battle system fun? Did you find yourself trying to get into battles just for the enjoyment of it?
Yes. In Persona, I ended up going into battles just because I kind of have a slight compulsion to
grind.
Not grind, but in Persona 4, the enemies are on the map. So I have a thing of I'm going to destroy every enemy I encounter because they're finite. They're on the map. I'm not running around.
You want to clear the area.
Exactly. So, and sometimes when you go to a previous area, enemies will respawn. But, you know, it's, oh, I'm going to go through, pick up all these chests, fight all the enemies. It isn't until I reach, like, a level cap where I start skipping enemies. Because at that point, there's no incentive. I'm not getting any experience. But through Persona, I'm like, oh, hey, another battle. Let's do this. Da-da-da-da-da. And I'm rewarded with music I enjoy. And you know, I get rewarded with good music. The battles are quick and they're smart. And also, they have that little card shuffle mini game at the end where I can get bonus items and experience. The battles themselves are fun in and of themselves, but I am also inspired to play more because there is a lot of rewards that are available if I play them smartly. Also,
a lot of things, right? So, yeah. Good thing to check out.
Exactly. And with Ni no Kuni, the battle system is, it's fun because it's so hectic. I mean, it's fairly basic, and there isn't as much strategy involved with basic enemies, whereas with bosses, you have to play a bit more smartly. But it's still a lot of fun. I don't sit there and go, oh, fuck, another battle. Even though enemies, if they see you, they'll chase your ass down, and 9 times out of 10, they'll catch you. And so it kind of makes it so you have to try and stay out of, if you want to avoid fights, you want to kind of stay out of their range of sight. But once they catch you, once they spot you and they start chasing you, you have a choice to either try and run, where they'll more than likely end up catching up with you. And if they hit your back, you basically have to wait like 10 seconds where they can hit you, and you have to try and run and avoid them in the battle. Or you can just charge them head on and have an equal playing ground. Or on the converse, you can attack their back and get an extra 10 seconds to just wail on them. So all those things combined really add to a fun combat system. So, Seventh, what about you? What do you think about good combat systems?
All right, so to think about this, I sat down and I thought, what are the battle systems that I really enjoy? And I kind of broke it down into two types. One, stuff that kind of has a deck-building aspect. Suikoden, Final Fantasy V, a lot of the Final Fantasies with the job systems. Pokemon is an easy example. Where, you know, with all these, each character, with the Suikoden, you have like a 6-person party, but you can have a total of 108, you know, party members. The Final Fantasy job systems, you can kind of swap out different classes for, you know, your characters. Everybody has played it. Final Fantasy, the job system, I imagine.
I haven't.
Oh, you haven't?
Dez hasn't played a lot of RPGs. What do you mean by deck building?
Like,
if you could define that in one sentence.
Yeah, one sentence. The being able to kind of swap out and kind of build your team exactly how you want it and have variety in that. With Suikoden, each character kind of, they don't have that many different abilities, that many different skills, but being able to, like, interchange them, and then some characters can do combo attacks with other characters, and stuff like that, so you kind of build the team just how you want, and then having this different team-building aspect, you can really try out new things in the battles, and I like that. For some people who just kind of, this doesn't work for the people who they know what they like, they'll build their team exactly how they want it, and then just play every single fight the same way. Because then all the fights play out the same. What I prefer is being able to, you know, try out different strategies with this wide array of options.
Yeah, I found that when I was playing Suikoden 1 and 2 was I would basically find an ideal team, and I'm just like, all right, this is the team I want. I'm going to level this team exclusively. But that was also in part because there were too many characters. Like, you have 120 characters. And, like, I'll play a game like Fire Emblem where I've got a small cast of, like, 20 characters. I'm like, all right, I'll level all these guys evenly. I've got opportunities to do that. Actually, no, in Suikoden, I did level up everyone evenly. I was like, anyone who was integral to the war minigames, I was like, crap, I got to level these guys up. So, yeah. That also lends to with the deck building is you can basically go, all right, I'm going to swap party members out because I want to keep everyone up to par just in case I'm forced to use them or just in case their level is relevant to something else in gameplay.
I hate that when you're forced to use characters. I remember I played this old RPG Maker game called Jay's Journey, and it was awesome. It was really unique and had a lot of party members that had, like, you know, 9 or 10 or something, and you swapped them out. But I had my main party. I had, like, 4 characters that I always used. And then the final boss comes around, and you're forced to split up into different groups. So I had one group that was like super, super under level. They were like all level 10. And then I had another group and they were all like level 55 or something. And it was like, oh, this is not fair.
Yeah, Persona 4 and also Persona 3 also had a minor deck building aspect to it, because each party member that you could choose from had a specific element assigned to them, their character. I mean, there were one or two party members in each game that could that had multiple elements at their disposal, but they didn't really have the strongest spells in that category. But it was the same thing where I would just level each character. I would level them all evenly, so they would all be high level just in case I wanted to swap one in and out. But I mean, I ended up near the end of the game having a core four member party where I was like, all right, these are my guys, but I also like to keep everyone up to level. But I mean, you've got Kanji, who specializes in physical attacks, but he also has lightning elements, so he can use his lightning skills to knock enemies down, or you can just have him do straight up physical attacks and hope for a critical attack. And then you had Yosuke, who has wind attacks, which are strong against certain other enemies. And if you know a dungeon has a certain, like, you could go a few floors into a dungeon, find out there's a lot of enemies weak to fire, and then, oh crap, I gotta switch out Chie, who gets hurt by fire, and put in Yukiko, who is strong against fire, and stuff like that. Yeah. So,
Persona, great for any possible example, apparently.
Yes, because it's one of the most ideal RPGs. That Ni No Kuni. Ni No Kuni's quickly jumping up there for the top spot.
Yeah.
So the other kind of gameplay hook that I liked, and it's roguelikes. Roguelikes are a very niche RPG genre, so I would imagine that I'd say they're pretty niche. For those that haven't played roguelikes before, they tend to have a permadeath system. You tend to only play as one character, and it's almost always a dungeon crawl. It's a free game, perfect to try out the roguelikes, Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup, or on Steam. There's some game on Steam I can't quite remember that's great for that. Dungeons of Dreadmore, great, easy access roguelike. But anyways, getting sidetracked. So I personally love roguelikes. They're all turn-based, and I try and figure out what it is I like about them, because it has such contrast with my other like, which is kind of the deck-building aspect, because roguelikes tend to be you play as a single character through the whole thing. And I realized what it is that roguelikes are great at building tension. And that's something that I really love in games. Fire Emblem, XCOM, a lot of games that build tension really well. And how they tend to do it is by using permadeath, which for a lot of, you know, your standard RPG Maker RPG, probably not the ideal, you know, system. Having your main characters die off permanently, not ideal. But having tension in your battle systems is intensely important, because you shouldn't. Another part of the fuck yes a battle is that you shouldn't feel like you're going to go in and just steamroll over the enemy. There should be that challenge to it, and you should feel like a victory should feel momentous. Maybe not momentous, but you know, a victory in battle should be just as rewarding as entering the battle.
It should feel like you earned it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's tension. It's important to build tension.
Yeah. So it feels like you're actually in a battle. You're not just pressing buttons. You're actually fighting your way through.
Yeah. At the same time, though, you want to have tension, but you also don't want the battles to drag on too long.
Yeah.
Like, if... A good rule of thumb is to just have it where if you steamroll, you're going to get your butt kicked. But if you play smartly, you should be able to finish the battle in at most 3 rounds.
You know what's a great example of that? Persona 4.
I wasn't going to say it because I already did. But then you went there. And it all comes full circle. But also roguelikes, there's many definitions to roguelikes. I mean, the one you described was pretty much the hardcore, the original definition of a roguelike. But games like Diablo, where there isn't a permadeath, but, you know, you have a character or you can party up with other players, and you just go through a dungeon, killing enemies, collecting loot, and you go as far as you can. I mean, there are very hardcore traditional roguelikes where it's... there's some on the DS, like Etrian Odyssey and something Wanderer. There's this Wanderer. It's a dude with the little straw hat thing.
Shimiru the Wanderer or something.
Yeah, yeah. There's that one where it's you have your character and you just go down and you go as far as you can until you die. And then you start all over again. Which is kind of frustrating, but it's also kind of fun in a way. But
there was an old rogue like that back on Gaming World. Some of the guys who made it. It was some of the guys who were responsible for Barkley Shut Up and Jam Gaiden.
Nice.
And this roguelike was called the Wu-Tang Clan and the Wu-Tang Baby. And it was the members of the Wu-Tang Clan exploring the sewers trying to find their lost baby that they all shared. It was really, really funny. It was hilarious, and the graphics were awesome. I don't know what ever happened with it. I don't know if it got finished or anything, but I remember seeing I think I played the demo or something, and it was just hilarious. And it actually had, like, good roguelike gameplay.
That's awesome.
It was super funny. Worth mentioning. If it's out there somewhere, I want to check it out again.
Honestly, I'm just saying just to try and get more people to make roguelikes.
That's what I'm trying to do right now. I mean, I've got more of a more casual roguelike, because there's not permadeath and you've got four party members. But it's essentially, here's a dungeon. Go as high as you can.
Yeah.
So, to me, that's the core for a roguelike, is you have a party and you just explore one dungeon and it has multiple levels and you fight enemies and there's a high risk and high reward aspect to it. Permadeath is...
brutal.
It is brutal. It can add to the excitement. And I like that it's optional. I like how in Fire Emblem, you have permadeath for characters, and you can either play casual mode where you don't have to worry about it, or you can play classic where the permadeath is on, which just makes you reboot every time a character dies. So you can either keep playing and suffer without those characters, or have it as a penalty to have to restart the entire battle for doing something stupid.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite new trends in gaming is this kind of addition of the optional permadeath and the hardcore mode. Is what that's games tend to call it. XCOM did it. Fire Emblem.
Diablo also did it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Diablo had nightmare mode where, you know, you would permanently die, lose your character, and all of their loot would just be gone. I mean, with an RPG, but with RPG Maker aspect, the idea of a permadeath, the problem with that is classic RPGs kind of have a quote-unquote permanent death, where if your party gets wiped out, it's game over, you got to start from the last save. With RPG Maker, you have to figure out how to delete their save if they die.
Cool. That's not cool.
Well, that's what permadeath is with an RPG like that.
Yeah, and I don't like it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. With a classic roguelike, when you die, that's it, you're done.
Well, isn't the a lot of appeal of that is that a lot of the areas are randomly generated anyway? So like, if you die, you still get a new experience. You don't have to sit through, you know, 4 hours of what you already played.
Exactly. That's the
I would strongly suggest against the permadeath route if you're not able to add new things when they start over.
If playing a new game is not a different experience each time, you really don't need permadeath. Like with strategy games and like Fire Emblem, that works because the battles can play out in multiple different ways. In Diablo and other roguelikes like it, the floors are randomly generated, so the layouts are different, the enemy spawns are different, so it's a unique experience each time. So if you choose to have permadeath in that, it's not that big a deal. It's like, all right, I fucked up, let me start over, but at least it's a new thing to do. With a more classic RPG, if you don't have that random content, and if it's going to be the same thing every time, why have it? But then at that point, it's not really a roguelike.
At that point, it's a JRPG.
Exactly. Oh, man, I'd love to have randomly generated floors, but the amount of work in that would just...
I know someone made a script for that, but I don't remember it working out very well.
Yeah, I mean, with pros, with professional games, more mainstream games, they can basically have a core set of assets and then have the computer pump out an algorithm that places those assets. With RPG Maker, if you want to make randomly generated stuff, unless you have extensive scripting knowledge to kind of recreate that, like somebody tried, but as Seventh said, it probably didn't work out that well. But it might, you know, people take a look at it and let us know if you've had better experiences with it. But the other way, and the more time-consuming way, is to basically make a pool of, like, 1,000 different levels.
Ridiculous.
and then just have it where, all right, I want to have a 100-floor dungeon, and each dungeon can have, you know, however many different variations. And basically, every time you hit a floor, pick a random number, this is the level they get. And then you could have that, but then you have to make 1,000 different levels, and you have to make them all of equal interest and difficulty. And, I mean, with enemies on the screen or with random battles, that could be easy because you just, all right, they've got a random pool. They run around. They got these random enemies. You don't have to worry about enemy placements. But then you got to worry about item placements and traps and dungeons and all this other kind of fun shit that just, oh, it's possible, but it is hugely time-consuming.
Yeah. It's something you want. You kind of have to – and you have to base your game around that premise.
Yeah,
but the one thing to know is that you don't necessarily have to go the full, you know, randomly generated app route and everything. You can have, for example, a bunch of different events on your map that pulls a random variable that may or may not be there, could change what it actually is. You could have subtle differences without having to go the full generate route. With RPG Maker, that's probably the best bet.
Yeah, I agree. Where you could have, I mean, you've got set maps. And if you wanted, you could have like one or two variations of that map. But I do like that where you'd have – there's certain events that could trigger, and depending on what random number you get, that determines whether it's, oh, is this floor going to collapse, or is there going to be lava here, or is it going to be a river instead? You know, those are cool things to do. So now that we've got roguelikes out of the way, Disping, what are your thoughts on battle systems?
All right, well – we all know that I'm not the biggest fan of the traditional Final Fantasy turn-based stuff. To me...
bad taste.
When you... when I'm in a battle, I want to feel like I'm in a battle. I don't want to feel like I'm just scrolling through menus. And I think one of the best RPGs that really captured this is Paper Mario. Or, you know, Super Mario RPG. And even though you did have a lot of, you know... it was an RPG. You still went through the menus and all that. But the big thing that really stuck out to me was the action commands and that kind of thing, where when you did your default attack, you would, you know, time the A button at the right time to make your jump stronger, that kind of thing. But more importantly, when you used an item or when you used a special skill, there was a special command that went with it. Like sometimes you had to tap the button really fast, or sometimes you had to there was like a meter and you had to time when you were going to hit it, and you had to hold back something, you know, in a direction and then let go, like to launch a hammer or something. And just that extra level of interactivity really added so much depth for me, because it felt like you're not just pressing buttons and waiting and just watching the battle happen. You're actually participating in it. And that's the big thing for me, is when I'm in a battle, I want to be in the battle. I want to... One of the things that I say all the time is when I'm playing a game is, man, I wish this game had a jump button. Like, I'm a huge fan of when I play a game, I want to press a button and I want something to happen in the game that immediately reflects what I'm doing, which is why I'm such a big fan of platformers and Mario, because you can press the jump button, your character jumps. It's like you're interacting with your character. You don't just press a button and then a menu appears and you do that kind of thing.
Funny you should mention that. Ni No Kuni.
Is there a jump button?
Ni No Kuni has an upgradable item where basically you can do quests for people and then you get stamps on your merit card. And when you collect enough stamps, you get a filled out card. And when you get enough filled out cards, you can unlock these abilities. One of the abilities that only takes one card is a jump button. And the description is basically, this lets you jump. It serves no purpose, but it's fun.
That sounds amazing.
And you can just push circle and he'll jump. And you can kind of tinker with it, like, it kind of gives you a subtle speed boost to rapidly jump, like on the world map to chase down enemies or to get away. But for the most part, it's just, you see Oliver just jump. It's really well animated. Like, the jump is long enough where you can jump down a little flight of stairs and stuff like that. So it's just a little subtle touch they put in there where I want to be able to jump. And you can jump. Doesn't serve any gameplay purpose, but it's just fun.
That's exactly what I want. I mean... I would like it if it had more of a gameplay purpose, sure. But, I mean, it's just enough for me, you know. Just that little added interactivity to make an RPG feel more like an actual game than just a menus and reading and text.
Yeah.
So, the other part of the battle system that I wanted to talk about, which is in the same line of, you know, the action commands and jumping, A lot of what I do when I'm working on my battle systems is I take cues from games that are not RPGs. I talk a lot about Banjo-Kazooie, I talk a lot about Mario, I talk a lot about... recently I started playing Donkey Kong 64. And, of course, Metroid Prime, it's shooting, it's a lot different. But in Metroid Prime, you can upgrade, you get different items, that kind of thing, your weapons. And I like to carry over that as much as possible into RPG battle systems, even if it doesn't always work perfectly. You can skew it a little bit here and there. So, like, for example, in an RPG Maker game, say you have an item and you want to, you can upgrade your weapons or whatever. I mean, that's kind of standard. But if you can make it where in the battle system itself, you can reflect the power in more than just an animation. Like, if you're able to add it so that, say you have an upgraded weapon and it does, like, a fire attack instead of its normal attack. And when you're in the battle system, you choose your fire attack. And then maybe there's like a little pop-up and you have to, you know, press the arrow at the right time so that the temperature is the highest possible. So just something like that. I mean, in most cases, this will require some kind of scripting or, you know, some you know, clever event commands. But it can add so much depth to the battle system where the player feels like he's actually playing the game.
But it also requires a lot of finesse. Yeah, it requires a scripting, but it requires also a lot of balancing. Games like Mario and Luigi on Game Boy Advance and DS, or Super Mario RPG, where you have, all right, you got timed button things, where you are a bit more involved. That's fun, and they did it really well. Games like Legend of Dragoon did it to a frustrating point. I mean, it was cool to be able to time your hits, but if you fucked up even once, your damage is severely limited.
Oh, no way. Like, the thing in Mario RPG is that when you have your default damage, and then when you hit your action command, you get a bonus damage. There's
exactly.
No punishment for
it's
doing
a reward.
That
wrong. It's a reward.
It's all upside.
Yeah, you should not be penalized for it. So, but Legend of Dragoon is also an example of how not to make an RPG, so I always like to throw that in there. And I know I'll probably be crucified by some fanboys over that, but it's just, I was just like, all right, so we got a Power Rangers dynamic, this is cool, and then I actually played it, and I'm just like, oh my god, the story is terrible, and the graphics, and the gameplay, and just, oh, and this game had a crash. If you played the PlayStation Greatest Hits disc on a PS2, and not on a PlayStation 1, if you used your Dragoon form on the little Leviathan boss, when you finish the fight, the reward screen would not pop up. The music would play, it'd be a black screen, and it would sit there indefinitely. 100% reproduction rate always happens. At that point, I said, fuck this game! And stopped.
Alright, well, the other thing I wanted to talk about in terms of battle system, and steering away from the idea of, you know, action commands and interactivity, you know, which is obviously my big thing, let's talk a little bit about the Pokemon battle system. Because it's super simple, but it's also super, super deep at the same time. There's a lot of strategy involved that you won't necessarily think about at first. Obviously, there's the elemental stuff that you were talking about earlier. But the moves, the special moves, there's so much depth in there. And when I make a battle system, a lot of it is about the special skills. I am a fan of not giving your players a million extra skills that just do different variations of, you know, elemental damage. I like skills that are unique and make you stand out. Like, some examples from Pokemon, there's Trick Room that switches the gravity of the battle so that your slow characters go first, that kind of thing, which is a really unique effect. And, in Pokemon, they have whole teams that are based around Trick Room, where all your characters are slow, and your first character goes in there and does that, and then the whole battle is warped in your advantage. And then there's other moves like Grass Knot, which does more damage if your opponent's heavier because it trips them, and that kind of thing. And those kind of skills that are really unique and have a unique kind of effect, it's really easy to put those in RPG Maker, especially with VX Ace, where you can add your custom formulas and that kind of thing.
Yep.
So I'm definitely a huge fan of unique skills, unique items that really make the battles a lot more strategic and also just more unique. They're more memorable because you can say, oh, this skill does a really unique thing. I can, you know, strategize the battle around that skill. I can put my characters into a position where they use this skill, and it feels a lot less just, you know, spamming different, you know, powerful attacks.
Yeah, there's a difference between, I'm going to use Faraga. That's cool. And, oh shit, Trick Room. Ah, fuck, Trick Room. having unique attacks like that can really elicit a different reaction from people, because being able to swap it so your fast characters now your slowest can really mess with the game, and people will design entire teams where they're, I want my characters to be as slow as possible so I can just slap on this trick room and just wipe the floor with them. Now my slow, heavy, hard-hitting characters are now super fast, but they hit just as hard, and they have just as high defense.
Your generic fire one, fire two, fire three, it's not really exciting. Yeah.
I mean, it's to be expected at times, but it's not...
Sometimes.
It's not exciting. I mean, what makes Persona 4 is... The reason why Persona 4 is so exciting with that is because they string it into a combo type thing. You hit an enemy's weakness, it knocks them down and gives you the chance to do even more damage, whereas with Final Fantasy, you hit their weakness, you just get bonus damage, and that's it. There's none of that little extended mini-game aspect to it that makes it interesting.
The nuance. Gotta have the nuance.
Indubitably.
Alright, so the last thing I want to talk about in terms of battle system is... I mean, there are so much we can talk about battle systems. We might even be able to get another subject out of it because we're getting pretty far into this. But I do want to mention the feeling of being powerful and leveling up. And the whole reason a person plays a game is, you know, the whole escapist aspect of it. And they want to feel powerful. When you're in a battle system, I mean, I read a comment earlier on the forums where somebody said leveling up was pointless because all it does is make the player feel powerful. And it makes me think, wait, what?
That's the whole point of leveling up, you want to feel power.
The player wants to feel powerful. The player wants to feel like he's getting stronger as the game goes. That's the whole point. And giving your player stronger skills, giving your player better weapons, it's all about the way the player feels. When you're making a game, you're crafting an experience. And that's something I say all the time about, you know, getting the whole experience down. And in battles, the experience that you want to create is you want to give the player a feeling of triumph. You want to give him the feeling that he's fighting these enemies and he's winning and he's getting stronger because of it. And we talked about rewards on a previous podcast and rewarding the player with more level ups, rewarding the player with more items and armor and skills and that kind of thing. And it all goes into the idea that when you're in a battle, you want to feel like you're actually fighting. You want to feel like you're going to win. And when you do win, you want to feel like, yes, I got there. You don't want to say, all right, I won. You know, I got to level up. Yeah, let's go to the next one. When you go into a battle, you want to be like, all right, let's get in this battle. Let's do it. Let's beat these guys and let's feel like a fucking champion.
Exactly. You definitely want that sense of power where you're just like, all right, I'm going to whoop these guys' butts. And I mean, at the same time, you also want to feel like you're fighting worthy opponents. I find it very frustrating where I'm super powerful and then I'm killing things in one or two hits. I'm like, you're not even worth my time. Like, you're not even worth the blood on my shoes.
I think we mentioned it before in Earthbound, when you were at a high level, you go into an enemy and they just die right away. You don't have to go into the battle. And I love that a lot. It shows your power.
Yeah. I mean, there's no effort involved. Either they die or they flee. That's what they did in Suikoden, is if you were too high level...
Oh, yeah, they just dip.
Yeah,
they're out of there.
They would run, or you could intimidate them. You could basically just go, I'm going to kill you, and they would either run, or they'd go, oh, here, have money. I thought was a cool way to mix up just the little traditional turn-based battle system.
And that's great, because it makes the player feel like all his work is leveling up. It really, you know, emphasizes the idea that he's powerful. He's a lot, like, earlier in the game, these enemies would have attacked him. Now they're afraid of him because he's that much stronger.
One important thing to remember, that kind of, a lot of the Final Fantasies have put this image in people's heads that big numbers equals, like, feeling powerful.
Nope.
And your stat could be, like, a million, but it wouldn't really matter because it's just a number. Personally, I love games, this is kind of sidetracking, but I love games that use smaller numbers.
Okay. You know,
a lot of the Mario games did that.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to do in my project, is I want the numbers to start off small. Like, that's another thing I like about Final Fantasy, is they start off small. I mean, they'll eventually get bigger, but they get to like 9999. RPG Maker's default stats are like, you're doing hundreds, if not thousands of damage within your first few levels. And then, like, they can cap out at like a million damage. And I'm just kind of like, oh, that's overkill. That's really not necessary.
It's meaningless. I mean,
or Dragon Warrior's a champion with that, where you're doing like 5-6 damage. And then, so I'm going to max out at 99. Hell yeah.
That's what I like. I like 99 as the max.
I'm partial to 999 for a max damage, but I do like 99 for like max stats. Like the highest you can get is 99 strength. Leave it at that.
That's a good balance.
Yeah. I've actually found that while I was working on balancing the stats in my game is I was like, all right, I want the cap for stats to be 99. But I also want to have buff skills. And if the buff skills with RPG Maker is the first buff adds 25% to the total. The second buff makes it so it's a total of 50% added to the total. So if you want your level, if you want your cap to be at 99, but you also want the buffs to be effective, because you don't want it to be where, all right, I have a max stat of 99, I use this buff, it's not going to go up anymore because the highest it can go is 99. You have to have your natural, your base stat cap out at 66. And then I wanted to have equipment boost stats. So then you have to reduce the base stats even more. And the real complication I found that added for an interesting balance and kind of made sense why earlier games would have it so the weapon stats would be so low, like, oh, it's +1 or +3 strength, is strength in RPG Maker is pretty much equivalent to your damage. It is your attack stat. There isn't strength and then attack. So it's like I'd have a base stat of 66 to work off of, but then I want like your highest tier weapon to be able to do like 30 damage. So then now your base stat has to be like 36, and then, oh, I'm going to have a few things here to boost +3 damage here and there, and so then you have to drop it. So suddenly their base strength stat is 25, but then there's all these equipment and skills you can use to boost it all the way up to 99. So that was something I experienced that I thought was pretty interesting.
It also lets you have a lot on the designing side. Having those smaller numbers lets you really control the balance of the game a lot better.
Yes. People who complain a lot about balancing when they're using such high numbers, it's like, okay, yeah, how am I – if all right, I gave this boss 5 million HP. How am I supposed to figure out how they're going to do it with – like, oh, is he going to be doing 999 damage or is the algorithm going to shoot him up to 9,000? It's just – ugh, I don't know how this is going
to
work.
Yeah, and from a player perspective, it's a lot easier to be able to say, all right, this dude has 10 HP, my attacks do about 2 each, so I'm going to kill him in 5 hits. It's faster, they can do the math in their head without thinking about it as much. You just cut off the zeros at the end, you don't need all those zeros.
Exactly.
Just bring it down, and it's easier for everybody involved to visualize how it's going to pace itself.
Oh yeah, plus like with your example where it's like, all right, well, he's got 10 HP, my attack does 2 damage, but if I use this spell, it'll be 2 damage, but I'll also get a bonus, so, oh, it's going to do double damage, so I'll use this, and he'll get 4 hits. So then suddenly, instead of having to do it in 5 rounds, I can do this in 3 rounds. Yes!
Yeah. All right, so do we have anything else to say about this, or should we move into our final thoughts on battle systems?
Final thoughts.
Seb, you want to go first?
Yeah. Make more roguelikes. the small numbers thing I think is just really important as a good base to set off of. So once you have there, then you can branch off to, okay, now that I have this better control, I can make my abilities, you know, more sensible. I can make these custom algorithms, and then you go up to the next level of having the, you know.
Yeah, once you've got it on a 1 to 100 scale, you can go, all right, I'll just multiply everything by 100. That should work out. Test. Fuck, it's broken.
Once you have a good controllable base, you can kind of work off a cool battle system from there. Just try and have something unique, but don't go into it with all these kind of preconceptions of how the battle system has to be. Small numbers, the deck building, all that stuff, it's all just unique stuff that, you know, someone somewhere said, man, wouldn't it be cool if.
Yeah, but you don't have to throw everything in there. That's one thing I really dislike with a lot of battle systems that I see, is people are all, I'm going to throw in these millions and millions of features that I've seen in every game I've played, and they all have to be in one game, and not even considering balance, flow, fun factor. The other thing to consider is, you know, just figure out what you want your core battle system to be. Figure out how it'll be fun with that simple formula. Add a little nuances if you want, but don't swamp everything with features.
Start simple and get unique from there.
Exactly. Like Magna Carta for PS2 had a needlessly complicated battle system. It had all these features involved in it that were just a pain in the ass to remember and deal with.
Wasn't it basically what Deathbane wants, but done horribly?
Yes, exactly.
All right, yeah, my final thought, I just want to emphasize interactivity. I want to emphasize that even if you're not able to put action commands, I mean, sometimes it doesn't work out perfectly, but interactivity doesn't have to be that. Interactivity can be just, you know, strategy or a little more than just going through the menus. Just, you know...
Need more than bashing attack.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we mentioned the special skills, that kind of thing. And it boils down to the idea of that you want a simple battle system at its core. You want, you know, some a major game mechanic or two that you build around, and everything that you add onto it, then you can start adding the extra features as long as they all tie into the core system itself. You really want to have something unique that stands out as one single gimmick, and from there you can build off of it.
Yes.
So basically, don't bog your battle systems down with too much extra stuff, and get the feel right. Get the feel right. That's the important thing. You want it to feel good for the player. You want them to have the experience is what it's down to.
And I know that sounds kind of vague, but a good rule of thumb is, if you're not having fun testing it, people are probably not going to have fun playing it.
True that.
Yep.
So moving on, we're going to talk about last week's question, or I mean last month's question. Kill him! And last episode we did was cliches, and we got a lot of good feedback, and we also got a lot of angry feedback. Well, not angry, but we got a little rumbly in people's tumblies. People gave us a hard time, or Deathbane in particular gave him a hard time about the idea of renaming elves, where they thought of it just as simply, I have an elf, let me give them a new name, which I agree is a silly idea.
Yeah.
But
that's not what we were talking about.
Exactly.
I wasn't saying that you should make elves and then give them a new name just to sound cool. I was talking about using the elf race or the dwarf race as an archetype and then build something completely new and using the archetype just for a bit of familiarity.
Yeah, like, instead of thinking as elf and dwarf, think of it as magic race and blacksmith race.
Yeah, or you know, forest race, mountain race.
Yeah, exactly. It's more of what those races represent and then giving it a new skin instead of just going, oh, I'm going to have elves. They're going to be pointy-eared, and they're going to be dark-skinned, and they're essentially drow, but I'm going to name them Fegzavith. That's a bad idea. But if you, like you said, you know, flying feathered snake people, Quetzalcoatl type stuff, and I'm just like, okay.
Yeah, you can't call them elves in that case.
Exactly.
Can't.
So they wouldn't be an elf.
Yeah, it seems like some of the people who were commenting on that, maybe we were too vague about what we were trying to say there. But the idea wasn't that you should just slap a new name on something that already exists, but that you should be able to build off of existing archetypes and create something new from it.
And then Chrome also said that we should talk more about cliches and battle mechanics, which isn't what a cliche means. We were talking about cliches and stories, because cliches usually apply to stories. I mean, there are battle mechanics that are used frequently, but that wouldn't be what a cliche is. You keep using that word. I don't think that word means what you think it means.
I had to do it.
Yes, exactly. You always need a Princess Bride reference. All right, we've got Princess Bride, Metroid Prime, and Persona as mandatory episode references. Okay, so... Through every episode, we like to encourage people to come up with original gameplay ideas. So it was mostly we were trying to focus on avoiding story cliches, because gameplay cliches, quote unquote, improperly used word, is something we kind of cover in every episode where it's like, okay, this is what's done. This is what can be done. Try and come up with your own thing. It's the general theme with this show. And then somebody called Sleep made a great point about cliches. That he doesn't really care if there's crystals or cheesy villains, clowns, what have you, because sometimes he enjoys what he aptly named as junk food gaming, and that's perfectly acceptable. We talked about Mario Galaxy, and that had pretty much no story at all, but the gameplay was so well done and so engaging and so much fun that it was worth it. It was an excuse plot. You had fun with it. Nobody cared. All that matters is making a story that fits your gameplay, and you want to try and make it unique, try and give it its own identity. But like we were talking earlier with the battle system, with battle systems is you want to make it familiar but different. Like we were talking about with the player play, with the Pac-Man. It was Pac-Man-esque, but it was different because it's this cute pixie-type thing instead of a little yellow ball guy. So that's the kind of thing you want to aim for with your gameplay and your story, is to make it familiar but different. So people feel at home, but they're also not doing the exact same thing they've done before. So with that, we're going to propose to you all next week's question, or this week's question. And that is, how do you spice up your battles in RPG Maker? What type of things do you do to make your battle systems unique, or to make them fun, is a better way to think about it.
And if your answer is just, I scour the script forums and add as many as I can.
Wrong. You lose. Good day, sir. Goodbye. Now we got Willy Wonka in the mix. So, but yes. How do you guys mix up your battle systems? And think of it from a gameplay aspect. Like, oh, I throw in skills that let you swap speed stats, so now your slow characters are fast and your fast characters are slow. Something like that. How do you mix it up? How do you make it unique and interesting? So with that, I think we've pretty much wrapped this up, beaten this horse to death.
Yeah, Sabbath, do you want to add anything before we go into our outro?
That was great coming on. Fun bunch. If you want to contact me, I'm new Sevith on the RPG Maker web forums. You can just send me a PM. I'm happy to chat and
forward all your hate mail too.
Oh yeah, oh, it's been. I haven't been. I used to be an admin, but I kind of got busy with school, so I had to drop out of that. And man, I missed the hate mail.
Oh my god, I want the forums to be this way. Sometimes when I see messages, that's kind of the voice I read them in. So remember, kids, if you send me a message with bad grammar, that's what you sound like in my head. Hello, sir. I win Super and the Pokemon.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This has been Episode 12 of the Final Boss Blues RPG Maker Podcast. Today we talked about battle systems, and we had our special guest host. Thank you very much for joining us today, Sevith.
Yes.
My pleasure.
All right, so as always, you can hit us up on Twitter, at Final Boss Blues, or at Raynard Frost. And
yeah.
Make sure to leave a comment in the forums, in our RPG Maker thread forum topic, or on finalbossblues.com. And we do have I added a Facebook page for Final Boss Blues, just for people who, it's nothing fancy, but I just added it as a way, you can go ahead and like it, that way you'll be able to see updates when we have new articles, when we have new podcasts, that kind of thing. It'll show up in your feed, so you don't always have to continually check the website for that kind of thing. So go ahead and like us on Facebook. Be sure to leave a comment, let us know what you think about this episode, what you think about our potential new co-host here, and thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Adios!
Adios!